So we enter the US market together, a Brit and Australian leading the US team. Can you imagine if we had to come in with a fixed mindset and assuming that exactly what we did to create success in the UK was exactly what the US market needed, which I think a lot of businesses actually are at a massive disadvantage. And I think it actually stems from, not to be too meta, it comes from ego.
Sure.
And when you become really successful, let's say fast, or you keep getting promotions, you can have this like sense that I have all the answers. I know what we should do. Georgie and I entered the US market with deep curiosity, which goes back to our first principles approach of how do we scale business? Curiosity, having a genuine care factor and authenticity for what we're doing. Rather than me, I had the remit of kind of resetting our entire sales strategy in the US. I'm certainly not going to arrive on day one and think that I know the answers. What transpired was a deep process of consultation with our clients and partners around exactly how they saw Acast, exactly what the barriers to entry were, and exactly what they needed. And what we learned was it was a completely different buying model in the US. They had a default towards scalability, automation, and audience addressability, which was a complete opposite to the winning formula in the UK, which was really creativity, integrated partnerships, was the way that they saw podcasting. Can you imagine if we entered the market and assumed the same principles and rules applied? And again, I think that goes back to this first principle approach of curiosity. You know, it's where Stephen started with the podcast as well, getting deeply curious about how all the component parts work together and then not assuming that there's one way to do things. Not assuming
Yeah, it's funny, right? This idea of the winning formula is really central to agility in leadership generally. You know, you walk into it could be a different market, like you've just described. It could be a different team. It could be a different function. It could be anything that is different, but the speed at which you can achieve an understanding on the winning formula is actually the game, right? Mm-hmm. And it actually doesn't matter what the context is that you come from. It's about the appetite to discover the winning formula. And I actually don't think that an individual can achieve that by themselves. I think it actually does take more than two or three minds to actually get to that point of view. And that's why that consultation you talk about is so important. But I've seen this hundreds, if not thousands of times where, yes, it is ego, but it's also just not the capacity to move your mind to a point that goes, I might have to unlearn everything that I came into this conversation with and just start asking some questions like I'm sitting in front of my 10-year-old daughter, who, by the way, would school me quicker than I would ever be able to do by myself.
Which is interesting because you talk about a framework, let's say, and a playbook.
Yeah.
And maybe people think there's these like really complex steps. It's not, in my experience.
Nope.
It's
me neither.
Curiosity.
Yep.
First and foremost, if I would say what scales business is being deeply curious. I am really passionate about, and certainly at Flight Story, it's one of our fundamental values of high humility, low ego. Because humble people don't think they know the answers.
Yeah.
And they're willing to ask for help. They're willing to do a series of tests, which is really critical to our culture. We A/B test everything, which I'm sure we'll get to. And, you know, it's funny, playbook, systems, methodologies. No, it's typically first principles, which is curiosity, care factor scales, and definitely in sales. And we spoke about it, I think, at the top of the call. Clients and partners know if you're being authentic.
Yeah, from a mile away.
From a mile away. They know if you're, you know, for the context for your audience, obviously my career is being defined by, let's say, sales and commercial partnerships. They know if you are there for a transactional opportunity to try and hit your quota to be kind of somewhat self-serving.
That's it.
And I laugh about this with my team. I'm a chief revenue officer and I'm not even remotely motivated by money. I don't ever think about the quota. I don't ever, obviously I report on our numbers, but I am not in this like, obsessive
view of
the numbers. Yeah. I think about a first principles of approach of everything that we can control, showing up in a consistent way, anchored in curiosity, asking the right questions, really trying to understand what's motivating the other person, understanding their incentives, which is really important as well. I'm always encourage the team to be deeply curious around the client's world and ecosystem. Who you're speaking to is one tiny tiny fraction of the broader equation. If you think about in the case of a chief marketing officer that I would probably have to get on board at this point, like to be bought into investing in a big, let's say, commercial partnership with us, ask the question, what's your internal approval process look like?
Yeah.
What are the steps from here? We've spent weeks together, and most of the time it is mind-blowing how many steps that they still need to go through in terms of getting finance involved, presenting to their CFO to justify that this is a good allocation of money, because capital is really important, capital to scale your company. And I think, you know, I really celebrate any kind of, you know, CMO that makes really takes a lot of time in deciding the decisions of their capital allocation. And then in a lot of cases, it can go to even the CEO level if it's a very significant budget investment. But how many people, and I'm sure in your career, and I'd love to hear from your perspective, how many people just don't even bother to ask?
Like everyone. Yeah. And I think the thing is I mean that flippantly, because I know there are people listening who go, I do this all the time. I feel like I'm still not getting anywhere. I feel like there are two primary questions that I ask a lot when it comes to that incentive question. Mm-hmm. One is organizational, one's personal. And the first question really is to you as the individual, if we get this partnership across the line, how will that help you in your role?
I love it.
Like, how will we make you rock star style good as a consequence of you partaking in this deal? And that's only a small part of it, right? But we ask that question of every single person we meet. Now, in my biotech experience and healthcare experience, I would ask that question of nurses and technicians and people that are so far removed from a deal, because I have a very strong bias towards the front line. So I would ask them just to get a sense, and then I'd go all the way back up. And of course, the answer is different to everyone because they've all got different internal motive, but it pieces together the web you need to understand to make it work. The second question is, what will this do for your organization, given your perspective of the organization? Now, the front line, you've got a very different one, right? You're there to do a job, get paid, maintain your employment, and hopefully be part of a great culture if that's where you work and you love being there. But if you are at the senior level, as you know, it's maybe, well, actually, we would like to make this successful because we might be able to then buy other companies. We might be able to trade differently. We might have a different reputation in market. Now, they're fundamentally different. Mm-hmm. But if you don't ask those two questions to as many people as you meet through the process of formulating a partnership, then you're going in blind. And so when people say to me, you know, so many partnerships fail, I said, no kidding, right? No one's asking the question. So the only way that you can know what to walk away from, and part of this framework we talked about at the top of the call, you know, one element of the framework I love to talk about is the next best alternative. There is always one, right? And the one that is always there is you can walk away, right? If it's not going to be ideal for you and your team. So I think there is something just very fundamental about that curiosity and never, never letting up. You must always be understanding that, because the day you're having a conversation with a CMO or someone at the front line, that might be one of their best days they've had that year. Most often though, the time when you speak to them is not one of the best days in the year. So the signal you've just got there could be fundamentally misaligned from everything else you're seeing. If you're not curious, I'm not sure you're going to do very well, is the bottom line.
I fundamentally agree with everything that you've just shared, and curiosity and empathy. Sure. And I don't think we speak about empathy enough, and it's actually connected, because you have empathy for your clients, you want the media to work. Or if you have empathy for, you know, we also do live and speaking engagements, you have empathy for that business and where they are in their stage and phase of growth, and maybe they're having challenges, hence why they're asking Stephen to come in for a motivational speech about embracing AI and technology. And empathy comes down to human connection as well, which is so important. And you can really feel if you're speaking to someone and they have empathy for who they are, they have empathy for their media objectives, let's say, let's more from like a sales lens, empathy for the business challenges that they're going through.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm sure you've received briefs in your life or, you know, RFIs, and a lot of it can be surface level. And it's about, again, having the curiosity to ask more questions. Like, what is underlying this? Why do you have a brand awareness challenge? Why aren't you converting, you know, the product sales? Why haven't you been able to, let's say, scale the revenue, you know, as fast as possible? Maybe there's major internal structural changes, leadership changes. We are so deeply curious before we do any work with our clients. And I can't tell you how much time we spend researching before calls. And, you know, I know you and Georgie spoke and we spoke, you know, she shared about how much our internal team does, can, you know, the research into the depths before our podcast briefs. And we actually have the exact same approach in the commercial team because it comes from having that deep curiosity. You're going to have such more meaningful conversation if you're on the phone with someone and you actually understand their business. And I think we've all worked in sales teams where you've been on a call with someone and I can just tell that they haven't prepared. And I'm just like, we are doing ourselves such a disservice, not to mention now how much information, you know, the total democratization of information and access with ChatGPT and AI, you don't even have need to spend the same amount of time anymore. And that's if you weren't even curious enough to do your prep work, which I also always say to the team, the first time you meet a client, my KPI for whether or not that was a successful call is that I expect you to speak the least.
Correct.
Listen, it's not about us. Do you really think that they are invested in Flight Studio, Stephen Bartlett, and Dara, the CEO? No, that's our bias. It's about them, their company always. And how many times have you seen a pitch deck and it's like slide 10 and they haven't even spoken about the company or the client or who they're speaking, who they're trying to pitch to? I'm like, this to me is wild.
Yeah. How all those signals. Yeah.
All those signals, right? Which I don't know if it's humility, empathy, but who are we to think they care about, let's say, at the Nova, Acast, and now Flight Story with Dara Vasio and all of our other shows? I'm sure they're interested, but they don't fundamentally care about us. They care about their objectives, their incentives, their quotas, their performance review, their potential promotion, their growth of their company that will unlock their incentives. So, again,
and that's only one part of the wedge, right? Like, then they've got their own lives, right? So I think what I find super fascinating, and I guess I should have studied maybe things differently when I was younger, but the thing that I find fascinating is that, and Jeff Weiner talks a lot about this, a former CEO at LinkedIn, he would say, yes, I'm good for empathy. I'm better for compassion because I'm good to try and get my teams to walk in the shoes of the people we're here to serve. I'm better to want to have a bias to helping to get to that place. And that's his definition of compassion. And when we think about the partnerships on the other side, you know, one of my favorite authors on this topic is William Ury. He wrote the book Getting to Yes. He is a UN negotiator. He's been in all the hotspots around the world. He's had to deal with people who are literally ready to reach over the table and kill each other. He has found ways to help express and how to get to the point where you can understand what's actually going on in the other person's life. And it is such a competitive advantage because no one is getting out of their own invested mind, usually, right? That's and so true. when you get to a point, you can sort of say, you know what, and this is what my teams, my previous companies, if you don't know their birthday, their kid's name, something to do with the sport they enjoy, some hobby they've got, as well as the expertise that they are doing at their work, then we really don't have a right to have a conversation with them.